in space.
It sounds like all these designs have used origami folding methods in a similar way, to make something that needs to be large and expansive at its destination, small and compact for its journey there.
Bingo.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University.
Today's program was prepared by Jeremy Watt, with help from Robert Lang at Caltech. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. To get podcasts, click on the podcast button. For A Moment of Science, I'm Yael Cassander.
And I'm Don Glass.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, 6th and University in Champaign, now serving dine-in, lunch, and dinner daily from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., featuring a Middle Eastern menu along with hot soup, Turkish coffee, and herbal teas. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Coming up today on The World from PRI, June 4th, 1989 is a day many Chinese remember as the Tiananmen Square Massacre. It's a day the Chinese government would rather forget. On the eve of the 20th anniversary, you'll meet a former student leader who was in the square that day and a young college student who grew up never hearing about the crackdown. Tiananmen Square, remembered and forgotten, coming up today on The World at 3 o'clock Central Time. In sports this afternoon at the French Open, Roger Federer has moved on to the semifinals. He's now within two victories of completing a career Grand Slam at the French Open. Federer is seeking his 14th Grand Slam singles title, which would tie Pete Sampras's career record. Meanwhile, Svetlana Kuznetsova of Russia eliminated Serena Williams, the only woman still playing who had won the French title before. The St. Louis Cardinals continue their four-game series with Cincinnati tonight. The Cards have won 13 of the last 16 against Cincinnati at home. Kyle Loesch will get the start for St. Louis. Atlanta hopes to extend the Chicago Cubs' season-high road losing streak to 8 games tonight. Chicago hasn't won on the road since beating Milwaukee 4-2 on May 10th. Cubs pitcher Ted Lilly gets the start tonight. The Chicago White Sox have split the first two games of their four-game series with Oakland, but the White Sox are batting 190 and are 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position in those contests. Tonight, Chicago will try to improve on that when the Sox send Clayton Richard out to the mound. Tamika Catching scored 16 points, 13 in the first half, to help lead the Indiana Fever to a 67-60 victory over the San Antonio Silver Stars in the final preseason game for both teams. The Fever won all three of their preseason games. After back-to-back losses in Detroit to open the Stanley Cup Finals, Pittsburgh remains in contention with a 4-2 victory over the visiting Red Wings in Game 3 of the best-of-seven championship series. The Penguins can pull even with another home win tomorrow night. And it's the last off day for the Lakers and Magic before they open the NBA Finals tomorrow night in Los Angeles. The Lakers beat Denver 4-2 for the Western Conference Championship. Orlando surprised top-seeded Cleveland 4-2 in the Eastern Conference title series. That's sports. It's 2:44. In Ohio, the economic signs are going from bad to worse. The state recently lost thousands of jobs when the international shipping company DHL closed their operations there. Now a company that's been in Dayton for 125 years says it's packing up and moving south. From member station WYSO, Emily McCord reports.
When you're swiping your bank card in an ATM, you're probably not thinking about who made the machine. But for many people in Dayton, Ohio, that business has been a way of life. Now, National Cash Register Corporation, or NCR, has announced it will be moving its corporate headquarters to Duluth, Georgia. For Dayton, it means the loss of more than 1,000 jobs, many of them high-paying, white-collar positions. Richard Stock is an urban economist at the University of Dayton. He says the number of jobs lost in the Dayton area alone has been staggering.
We lost, since April of last year, 13,700 jobs, and another 1,300 simply doesn't help the situation.
A last-minute offer of $31 million in aid by Ohio Governor Ted Strickland couldn't compete with Georgia's offer of more than $60 million in breaks. Governor Strickland complains that NCR didn't respond to repeated attempts to discuss ways to keep it in Ohio. Local officials are now dealing with the aftermath. Montgomery County Commissioner Dan Foley says the news feels personal because NCR was key to the city's identity.
Dayton's always been known as an NCR town, and we're not going to be anymore. And I think that's a bit scary and a bit hurtful as well.
NCR was founded in 1884. It makes ATMs and airline check-in systems in addition to cash registers. The corporation was Dayton's only Fortune 500 company. For NPR News, I'm Emily McCord.
And Michigan's job crisis could be getting worse. It's not just General Motors, which just filed for bankruptcy, and Chrysler, which is in bankruptcy. Industry suppliers are bracing for more pain, and so are charities, hospitals, even local governments. Michigan Public Radio's Tracy Samilton reports.
Detroit and its automakers have been downsizing for a long time. The effect of GM's bankruptcy may not be all that noticeable for people like Jason Thomas. Thomas is sweeping Hart Plaza, a stone's throw away from GM's headquarters in Detroit. At midday, the place is deserted. Thomas says these days a guy who has a job cleaning city streets is lucky.
It's real hard. It's real tough to get by. It's hard out here. It's hard to find a job.
Thomas says it would be better for everyone if GM were doing better. He says now it looks like even the people with PhDs are hurting along with him. GM is laying off hundreds of white-collar workers here. It will also close or idle seven plants in Michigan. One is the Orion Assembly Plant, 40 miles north of Detroit. Jill Lubas worked here for 2 years in the paint and repair division. She figures the days of a big, dominating GM are just over.
It's not going to be like when my mom worked here for, 20 years. Like, it's a whole different set of rules and just different circumstances, and it's not going to be like it always has been.
One of GM's nicknames used to be Generous Motors. The automaker gave $57 million to charities in 2007. Now GM's donations could dwindle just as charities need the money the most. Detroit advertising agencies will take a hit. GM plans to slash its advertising budget by $800 million this year. Then there's the effect of plant closures on nearby small businesses. Matthew Gibb is supervisor of Orion Township. He says even temporary shutdowns at Orion Assembly have hurt the local economy.
They've been on a rolling shutdown all year, meaning they've been in production for a couple of weeks and then closed for up to 4 weeks at a time. And those time periods where it's closed, you can really see the effect on the community. You don't wait for a table anywhere. There's less people at the Home Depot.
The township will lose $500,000 in taxes when the Orion plant closes. GM plans to convert one of its idled factories to build new subcompact cars. Gibb says the township will do anything it takes to get that business. It's bad enough to see restaurants and shops close their doors, but there's worse that will happen.
We have around 26 suppliers in our community and in the northern part of Auburn Hills that all supply directly to the plant. So that starts kind of the waves of throwing. It's not a pebble anymore. You throw a big rock in the water, and it has these ripple effects.
GM hopes to emerge from bankruptcy in less than 90 days, but the pain of the company's restructuring will last much longer than that. Those who depend on GM could have a long wait before the automaker is once again an economic engine for its hometown and its state. But for now, the motto of the city of Detroit is GM's motto, too. We hope for better things. It will rise from the ashes. For NPR News, I'm Tracy Samilton.
In the wake of this year's tainted peanut butter scare, Congress is getting ready to approve changes to the Food and Drug Administration. Lawmakers want to give the American public more confidence in the safety of the food supply, but some people doubt they'll be able to make real change. Julie Grant reports.
Gwen Rosenberg is a mom. She has four boys to feed, so she'd like to be able to trust that the food supply is safe. But when Rosenberg heard that eight people died after eating peanut products earlier this year and hundreds more got sick, it confirmed her beliefs that the Food and Drug Administration isn't making sure food is safe.
There shouldn't be stories that come out that reveal that the peanut plant hasn't been inspected for years, or when it was inspected, there was rat feces. I mean, they're not doing their job.
Rosenberg wants the FDA to crack down on food manufacturers. She says they need to inspect more and shut down facilities when they find dangerous conditions. She was appalled when she realized the FDA has no authority to recall tainted foods.
The fact that they don't have recall authority essentially neuters the FDA. I mean, how are we supposed to take anything they say or do seriously if the end result is, well, we can't force you to do this? So, you know, thanks to the community service message not to eat the tainted peanut butter, but you're not actually making me any safer.
In the case of the Peanut Corporation of America, a test found salmonella in its products, so it retested. When that test came out negative, it went ahead and shipped out the products. But the FDA had no recall authority. Congressman Bart Stupak says that's just wrong. He's co-sponsoring a food safety bill that would give the FDA some authority in cases like this.
What the FDA can do? Shut her down. Prove to me that you cleaned it up. Prove to me, where did you destroy this product? Where did it go? Give me the facts. They can't give you the facts? Shut her down right now. Let's not wait 10 days.
But leaders in the FDA don't think recall authority would have made much difference in the tainted peanut product case. David Acheson is Associate Commissioner for Foods at the FDA. Once people started getting sick, he says most companies using the Peanut Corporation of America's products voluntarily recalled their cookies and crackers.
There's no suggestion that having mandatory recall is a panacea to solving food safety problems. It's one more tool that would be used from time to time when the situation warrants it, but it's not the answer to modernizing food safety.
Acheson says the real problem is that the FDA is so busy reacting to public health threats, to putting out fires, that it can't get ahead of the problems and fix the food safety system. He says the food system needs preventive controls. There are a lot of points in the food supply chain where hazards can creep in, when the food is being grown, processed, distributed, or sold in stores. Acheson says the food industry needs to identify control points for each food, where they're most at risk for becoming unsafe.
Is it a wild animal in a field? Is it the water supply for the spinach? Is it the temperature in my freezer in the retail store? And all of these things in between where things can go wrong and food can either become contaminated or if there is a low level of contamination, then bacteria can grow.
Once those control points are identified, Acheson says the FDA needs to do more inspections to make sure food is being handled safely from farm fields to grocery stores. But that's going to cost money. So Congress is considering charging companies fees to pay for those inspections. Food manufacturers don't like that idea. We contacted several companies, but none of them, not even the Grocery Manufacturers Association, would comment for this story. For the Environment Report, I'm Julie Grant.
For years, the Anacostia River that flows through Washington, D.C. was widely known as the Forgotten River, lost in the shadow of the better-known Potomac. At one point, some say the trash in the river was so thick you could walk from one side to the other without getting wet. Today, things are better, but most people say not enough has been done. D.C.'s city council is considering a 5-cent tax on every disposable plastic and paper bag, with most of the money going to cleanup efforts. As Kavitha Cardoso reports, if the legislation passes, the fee would be the toughest law on plastic and paper bags in the country.
Kindergartners from the Evergreen School in Wheaton, Maryland, are leaning over a rail and looking at bags, cups, wrappers, and other trash floating in the Anacostia River. They've traveled to D.C. to learn more about, as they put it, what kills fish. The 5-year-olds are not impressed with what they see.
It looks like disgusting water.
Garbage, like bottles and cans.
The children roll up their sleeves and start pulling trash from the bank, but it's going to take a lot more than their small hands to clean up this mess. Jim Connolly is with the Anacostia Watershed Society. He says Washington, D.C.'s own environmental studies estimate each year 20,000 tons of trash is thrown into the Anacostia.
It's like a landfill on a conveyor belt.
Studies also show plastic bags make up about 20% of the trash in the river. When grocery bags are thrown away, many of them are swept up by rainwater and carried into storm drains that flow into streams. They end up in the Anacostia. The bags often ensnare birds and turtles. Fish eat the small torn pieces, and that results in toxins making their way into the food chain. Tommy Wells is the DC council member who came up with the idea of charging a nickel for plastic and paper bags.
By charging a nickel, it really gets more into your head rather than your pocket. It reminds you, maybe I should have brought a reusable bag.
And part of the money raised will help low-income residents buy reusable bags. But Laurie Walker hasn't heard about that proposal. She says as a senior citizen on a fixed income, those nickels can add up quickly.
5 cents is a whole lot of money if you put it in a jar every month when I get paid. I can buy a chicken, hot dogs, eggs for my grandchildren.
The fee would raise nearly $2.5 million a year. Besides the reusable bags, the money will fund educational efforts and return a portion to local businesses as an incentive. The chemical industry, which makes the plastic bags, hopes anyone opposed to these kinds of fees or taxes will come out against this proposal. But environmentalists like the idea. Back at the Anacostia River system, Jim Connolly says with a little effort, the Anacostia could be trash-free in just a few years.
You know, in a perfect world, obviously the water quality would be addressed. And that can happen. The thing that's encouraging to me is that nature is always trying to seek balance. If we let the river alone, if we stop the input of pollutants, it would clean itself. So it's just that we're not letting the river do that.
Connolly and many others are hoping the Washington, D.C. bag fee helps make that happen. For the Environment Report, I'm Kavita Cardoza.
Support for the Environment Report comes from the Joyce Foundation and the USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. You can find more information and share your thoughts at environmentreport.org.
Earth and Sky.
Astrophysicist Marty Malinczak has discovered that our planet's upper atmosphere moves up and down. He describes it as breathing the sun's energy in and out.
Well, from a satellite's perspective, if you're up there in orbit and you're going along, the breathing looks like the energy from the sun has come in, the high-speed stream has come in, it's heated up the atmosphere, it's expanded it.
The high-speed stream coming in is what's called solar wind. It's made up of electrons and protons escaping through the sun's upper atmosphere and flying toward Earth.
Just like your house, when it gets hot, the air conditioner kicks on, brings the temperature down. When this energy from the sun comes in, these high-speed streams come in, they heat up the atmosphere.
And this is what activates the breathing. Earth's upper atmosphere expands from the heat and contracts when it's released. The fluctuation corresponds with the sun's own solar wind cycles.
Every 9 days, you have more stuff you're running into. The atmosphere has gotten denser, it's expanded, and if you're a satellite at a fixed altitude, all of a sudden you're running into more matter. When you've got people in orbit, even a little tiny piece of space junk could be catastrophic if it hit the space station.
Malinczak says that's one important reason for scientists to understand this atmospheric breathing. Our thanks today to Marty Malinczak. I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.